Chapter 1. The night of power, when fate stalked through the corridors of the world like a colossus just risen from an age-old throne of granite. E. Hoffman Price, the girl from Samarkand. Only the age-old silence brooded over the mysterious ruins of Kuth Shemis, but fear was there. Fear quivered in the mind of Shevitas, the thief, driving his breath quick and sharp against clenched teeth. He stood, the one atom of life amidst the colossal monuments of desolation and decay. Not even a vulture hung like a black dot in the vast blue vault of the sky that the sun glazed with its heat. On every hand rose the grim relics of another forgotten age, huge broken pillars thrusting up their jagged pinnacles into the sky, long wavering lines of crumbling walls, fallen cyclopean blocks of stone, shattered images whose horrific features the corroding winds and dust storms had half erased. From horizon to horizon, no sign of life, only the sheer, breathtaking sweep of the naked desert, bisected by the wandering line of a long, dry river course. In the midst of that vastness, the glimmering fangs of the ruins, the columns standing up like broken masts of sunken ships, all dominated by the towering ivory dome before which Shevitas stood trembling. The base of this dome was a gigantic pedestal of marble rising from what had once been a terraced eminence on the banks of the ancient river. Broad steps led up to a great bronze door in the dome, which rested on its base like the half of some titanic egg. The dome itself was of pure ivory, which shone as if unknown hands kept it polished. Likewise shone the spired gold cap of the pinnacle, and the inscription which sprawled about the curve of the dome in golden hieroglyphics yards long. No man on earth could read those characters, but Shevitas shuddered at the dim conjectures they raised. For he came of a very old race, whose myths ran back to shapes undreamed of by contemporary tribes. Shevitas was wiry and lithe, as became a master thief of Zamora. His small round head was shaven, his only garment a loincloth of scarlet silk. Like all of his race, he was very dark, his narrow, vulture-like face set off by his keen black eyes. His long, slender, and tapering fingers were quick and nervous as the wings of a moth. From a gold-scaled girdle hung a short, narrow, jewel-hilted sword in a sheath of ornamented leather. Shevitas handled the weapon with apparently exaggerated care. He even seemed to flinch away from the contact of the sheath with his naked thigh. Nor was his care without reason. This was Shevitas, a thief among thieves, whose name was spoken with awe in the dives of the mall and the dim, shadowy recesses beneath the temples of Bel, and who lived in songs and myths for 1,000 years. Yet fear ate at the heart of Shevitas as he stood before the ivory dome of Kuth Shemis. Any fool could see there was something unnatural about the structure. The winds and suns of 3,000 years had lashed it, yet its gold and ivory rose bright and glistening as the day it was reared by nameless hands on the bank of the nameless river. This unnaturalness was in keeping with the general aura of these devil-haunted ruins. The desert was the mysterious expanse lying southeast of the lands of Shem. A few days' ride on camelback to the southwest, as Shevitas knew, would bring the traveler within sight of the great river Styx, at the point where it turned at right angles with its former course, and flowed westward to empty at last into the distant sea. At the point of its bend began the land of Stygia, the dark-bosomed mistress of the south, whose domains, watered by the great river, rose sheer out of the surrounding desert. Eastward, Shevitas knew, the desert shaped into steps, stretching to the Hyrcanian kingdom of Turan, rising in barbaric splendor on the shores of the great inland sea. A week's ride northward, the desert ran into a tangle of barren hills beyond which lay the fertile uplands of Koth, the southernmost realm of the Hyborian races. Westward, the desert merged into the meadowlands of Shem, which stretched away to the ocean. All this Shevitas knew without being particularly conscious of the knowledge, as a man knows the streets of his town. He was a far traveler and had looted the treasures of many kingdoms. But now he hesitated and shuddered before the highest adventure and the mightiest treasure of all. In that ivory dome lay the bones of Thugra Khotan, the dark sorcerer who had reigned in Kuthchemis 3,000 years ago, when the kingdoms of Stygia stretched far northward of the great river, over the meadowlands of Shaman into the uplands. Then the great drift of the Hyborians swept southward from the cradle land of their race near the northern pole. It was a titanic drift, extending over centuries and ages. But in the reign of Thugrakotan, the last magician of Kuthchemis, gray-eyed, tawny-haired barbarians in wolfskins and scale mail had ridden from the north into the rich uplands to carve out the kingdom of Koth with their iron swords. They had stormed over Kuthchemis like a tidal wave, washing the marble towers in blood, and the northern Stygian kingdom had gone down in fire and ruin. But while they were shattering the streets of his city and cutting down his archers like ripe corn, Thugrakotan had swallowed a strange, terrible poison, and his masked priests had locked him into the tomb he himself had prepared. His devotees died about that tomb in a crimson holocaust, but the barbarians could not burst the door, nor ever mar the structure by maul or fire. So they rode away, leaving the great city in ruins. And in his ivory-domed sepulcher, great Thugrakotan slept unmolested, while the lizards of desolation gnawed at the crumbling pillars, and the very river that watered his lands in old times sank into the sands and ran dry. Many a thief sought to gain the treasure which fables said lay heaped about the moldering bones inside that dome. And many a thief died at the door of the tomb, and many another was harried by monstrous dreams to die at last with the froth of madness on his lips. So Shevetas shuddered as he faced the tomb. Nor was his shudder altogether occasioned by the legend of the serpent said to guard the sorcerer's bones. Over all the myths of Thugrakotan hung horror and death like a pall. From where the thief stood, he could see the ruins of the great hall, wherein chained captives had knelt by the hundreds during festivals to have their heads hacked off by the priest-king in honor of Set, the serpent god of Stygia. Somewhere nearby had been the pit, dark and awful, wherein screaming victims were fed to a nameless, amorphic monstrosity which came up out of a deeper, more hellish cavern. Legend made Thugrakotan more than human. His worship yet lingered in a mongrel degraded cult whose votaries stamped his likeness on coins to pay the way of their dead over the great river of darkness of which the Styx was but the material shadow. Shevetas had seen this likeness on coins stolen from under the tongues of the dead, and its image was etched indelibly in his brain. But he put aside his fears and mounted to the bronze door, whose smooth surface offered no bolt or catch. Not for naught had he gained access into darksome cults, had hearkened to the grisly whispers of the votaries of Skelos under midnight trees, and read the forbidden iron-bound books of Vatalos the Blind. Kneeling before the portal, he searched the sill with nimble fingers. Their sensitive tips found projections too small for the eye to detect, or for less skilled fingers to discover. These he pressed carefully, and according to a peculiar system, muttering a long-forgotten incantation as he did so. As he pressed the last projection, he sprang up with frantic haste and struck the exact center of the door, a quick, sharp blow, with his open hand. There was no rasp of spring or hinge, but the door retreated inward, and the breath hissed explosively from Shevetas' clenched teeth. A short, narrow corridor was disclosed. Down this the door had slid and was now in place at the other end. The floor, ceiling, and sides of the tunnel-like aperture were of ivory, and now from an opening on one side came a silent, writhing horror that reared up and glared on the intruder with awful luminous eyes. A serpent 20 feet long, with shimmering iridescent scales. The thief did not waste time in conjecturing what night-black pits lying below the dome had given sustenance to the monster. Gingerly he drew the sword, and from it dripped a greenish liquid, exactly like that which slavered from the scimitar fangs of the reptile. The blade was steeped in the poison of the snake's own kind, and the obtaining of that venom from the fiend-haunted swamps of Zingara would have made a saga in itself. Shevetas advanced warily on the balls of his feet, knees bent slightly, ready to spring either way like a flash of light. And he needed all his coordinate speed when the snake arched its neck and struck, shooting out its full length like a stroke of lightning. For all his quickness of nerve and eye, Shevetas had died then, but for chance. His well-laid plans of leaping aside and striking down at the outstretched neck were put at naught by the blinding speed of the reptile's attack. The thief had but time to extend the sword in front of him, involuntarily closing his eyes and crying out. Then the sword was wrenched from his hand, and the corridor was filled with horrible thrashing and lashing. Opening his eyes, amazed to find himself still alive, Shevetas saw the monster heaving and twisting its slimy form in fantastic contortions, the sword transfixing its giant jaws. Sheer chance had hurled it full against the point he had held out blindly. A few moments later, the serpent sank into shining, scarcely quivering coils as the poison on the blade struck home. Gingerly stepping over it, the thief thrust against the door, which this time slid aside, revealing the interior of the dome. Shevetas cried out. Instead of utter darkness, he had come into a crimson light that throbbed and pulsed almost beyond the endurance of mortal eyes. It came from a gigantic red jewel high up in the vaulted arch of the dome. Shevetas gasped, inured though he was to the sight of riches. The treasure was there, heaped in staggering profusion. Piles of diamonds, sapphires, rubies, turquoises, opals, emeralds, ziggurats of jade, jet, and lapis lazuli, pyramids of gold wedges, teocallis of silver ingots, jewel-hilted swords in cloth of gold sheaths, golden helmets with colored horsehair crests or black and scarlet plumes, silver-scaled corselets, gem-crusted harness worn by warrior kings 3,000 years in their tombs. Goblets carven of single jewels, skulls plated with gold with moonstones for eyes, necklaces of human teeth set with jewels. The ivory floor was covered inches deep with gold dust that sparkled and shimmered under the crimson glow with a million scintillant lights. The thief stood in a wonderland of magic and splendor, treading stars under his sandaled feet. But his eyes were focused on the dais of crystal which rose in the midst of the shimmering array, directly under the red jewel, and on which should be lying the moldering bones, turning to dust with the crawling of the centuries. And as Shevetas looked, the blood drained from his dark features, his marrow turned to ice, and the skin of his back crawled and wrinkled with horror, while his lips worked soundlessly. But suddenly he found his voice in one awful scream that rang hideously under the arching dome. Then again the silence of the ages lay among the ruins of mysterious Kuthshemis.